Hey guys, welcome back to This Is Life Unfiltered. I'm your host, Alexa Curtis. And on the topic of college, which is something that so many of you who listen and follow my platforms are either dealing with, leaving college and not knowing what you want to do for a career, or leaving high school, going into college, not knowing what you want to study. Here's the thing. Everyone at every point in their life is going to be a little bit confused. Even when you're the most successful Mark Cubans of the world, or you're where I am, where I'm a little bit successful, but not nearly where I'd want to be at 30. I wake up every other day and I'm confused about something. Sometimes I'm confused about my business. Sometimes I'm confused about a guy that I like. Sometimes I'm literally confused about what to have for lunch. At the end of the day, everyone is going to feel confused at some point or another. And the minute that you can realize that that confusion is totally okay and will just enable you to figure out eventually what you want to do, because you'll be so used to being all over the place that sometimes that eventually you'll wake up and you'll be like, I know what I want to do, if that makes sense. So this week I wanted to enlist a special person to talk about this topic with you and with me, because obviously I didn't go to college, though there's so many things that I wish that I could have gone to college for, even though it's a very select amount of things. There are a ton of things that I don't know and I think are really important for young people out there to know about college. So before I get into this interview, make sure to follow This Is Life Unfiltered on social media at This Is Life Podcast, as well as my personal social media, which is @Alexa_Curtis. This week, I'm bringing in Emily. She's the founder of a company that's a little bit similar to an Indeed meets a LinkedIn, but much more innovative, much more unique. She's so awesome, and she's been on so many platforms where she shares her advice for college and bringing together different big Fortune 500 type companies with emerging talent. And when I say talent, I mean people like you guys who are listening, who are leaving college, who are just in their senior year of college and looking for that job. And she connects these companies with this talent to create these authentic relationships that help end up eventually giving young people kick-ass jobs. So Emily's here to talk with me about this topic today. And there's so much on the topic of college that I'd love to talk more about. So if you have certain questions or certain people you'd like to listen to on the podcast, please feel free to email me. My email's in my Instagram bio, or it's ac@lifeunfilteredwithalexa.com. Love to talk about this topic all the time. So Emily, thanks for joining in the conversation today.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Well, tell me about how you got into FindSpark, because it really is so specific, but something so crucial right now that people need.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so my inspiration for FindSpark really came from my college experience. So I had a really, really amazing experience at Hofstra University in Long Island, New York. And it was there in my small fine arts department, liberal arts college part of the school, that I realized that, you know, there really weren't a lot of great career resources out there specifically for students just about to graduate, and also specifically around networking. And I found that as a pretty outgoing person myself, like, I always enjoyed going to events and meeting people. But even for me, you know, networking in a professional environment was intimidating, and also very intimidating for most people. And of course, the reason for that is also because a lot of networking experiences suck and they're not welcoming and they're not comfortable, especially for young people. But I knew how important networking was, and was for me. It was really integral in my career journey. And so that's really what inspired me to start FindSpark, something that would create career resources and networking experiences that were actually fun, actually enjoyable, you know, really a sort of for us, by us type mentality, of like being real and, you know, understanding that, yes, it is really competitive when you're trying to get a creative job and a creative industry, or, you know, any sort of job in like a big city like New York or LA or Chicago. But if you form a really strong network for yourself early on in your career, that it will be, that it is possible, and it'll be more enjoyable, the process. And so in doing that, we also always had a big emphasis on being very inclusive, whether that be the people we're highlighting in our digital content or the speakers we're inviting, always wanting to make sure that people saw all the different backgrounds you could come from to get a certain job or get into a certain industry. And so we create a really, really diverse community and inclusive community because of that, which is a big, big reason that we have really awesome employers working with us, because they want to build a strong, diverse pipeline of talent from all backgrounds. So they come to us to connect with that talent.
Incredible. Well, tell me a little bit about the college experience and how that was for you, because I personally didn't go to college, but I speak with so many entrepreneurs who either go to college and then start their own businesses, or don't go to college and start their own businesses during that time period. And now that you are an entrepreneur, do you regret going to college? Do you love the idea of going back to college again?
So I was actually really excited when you mentioned, you know, part of this topic being like deciding on college and how much do you decide you are willing to pay for it. So I actually left college with college owing me money, which I was really proud of. So Hofstra is a private school. So it is, I don't know what the price is now, but obviously it's more expensive than a community college or a state school. And so I knew that it would be a stretch for me and my family to go there, but I really, really wanted to go there for a myriad of reasons. And so I was always working, first of all throughout college. So I had the standard, student patrol officer, like crappy jobs. But I was also a tour guide, which I loved. I was an orientation leader for 2 summers, which was a really incredible job that I made some of my best friends. And I was also an aide and worked some different jobs within the fine arts department where I was a student. So I got really, really involved in a lot of different areas of Hofstra. I was also a big career center geek, so I was always in there. So I like made friends in a lot of good places. So with the admissions team, with the fine arts department. And so one of my biggest pieces of advice, which I don't get to give often, is that if you end up going to college, and really wherever you end up going, take some time and put in some effort into forming relationships with not just your fellow students, but the professors and the department heads and other, you know, sort of areas of the college that you're involved in, you know, if you're a student leader or you're an athlete or something like that. Because what happened with me was I actually only joined the fine arts department my sophomore or junior year, where I started to struggle financially with being able to continue to pay tuition. And the fine arts department basically had these pockets of scholarship money that I hadn't gotten on the way in, because I wasn't a declared fine arts major, but because I had become such an involved member of the fine arts department, they ended up like giving me scholarships after the fact, like as a sophomore, as a junior. And a similar thing happened with the admissions department, because I was a tour guide there. There was a scholarship that was supposed to be given for students coming in who were Girl Scout Gold Award recipients who were also in the top 10% of their high school class. So I got my Girl Scout Gold Award, but I was not in the top 10% of my class. So I didn't get that scholarship on the way in, but it was either like my sophomore or junior year that I told them like, hey, I'm struggling here. Like, is there any way you can help? I'm so involved. I love Hofstra. I don't want to leave. And they were like, hey, we have this scholarship and nobody claimed it this year. So because you meet some of the qualifications, you can have it. So, and actually also even the first tuition or scholarship I received just for my regular application, I went back and talked to the admissions counselor and said, hey, I need more if I can come here. And they gave me a little bit more. So one of my big tips, I definitely do not regret going to college. I was able to leave with much lower student debt than other people, I think, because of scholarships and that I worked all throughout college. But my big advice would be just to ask for more, like wherever you are.
Ask for more financial aid.
Yeah, just ask for more scholarships and more financial aid, because sometimes there.
Mm-hmm. Keep going.
Well, and because sometimes there might be sort of loopholes where maybe you didn't get a scholarship you know, your freshman year because you didn't meet all the qualifications. But again, like what happened with me, nobody got that scholarship 1 year, but they made a basically exception for me because I met some of the qualifications and I had a relationship with the admissions department. So once you get into school, I would say oftentimes I don't think people are thinking about there's any potential to get more scholarships like once you're in. But if you are a really great student and you're very involved and you can make good connections, it's worth asking different departments and things to say, hey, is there any scholarship money or work study money that is, you know, not being used that I might be eligible for?
So throughout high school, then into college, were you thinking about how you were going to afford college? Was your family going to help you?
Yeah. I mean, so for me, I come from, I would probably describe it as like a lower middle income family. My parents were divorced. And so, you know, I was definitely always under the impression that I would need to be getting scholarship money and working through school and saving up for it as well, in addition to getting some financial aid from, you know, the government and just help from my parents as well. So yeah, that's why as soon as I got there, I got into college, like I knew that I needed to work my butt off and get really involved. And also just, you know, have those normal jobs that are not necessarily super fun or good for your resume, but, you know, help every little bit helps. And again, like my secret tip is, you know, if you do get very involved and you can make connections with your department and administrators, sometimes they're able to, you know, find extra scholarship money or financial aid that you couldn't get on the way in, which was incredibly helpful for me.
Where were you exploring the other parts or financial aid kind of divisions of things? Because I mean, like I said, I didn't go mm-hmm. to college, and everyone who knows me knows that I didn't mm-hmm. go. But mm-hmm. when I was deciding whether or not to go, the reason that I didn't go initially was because I really didn't think I could afford it. And I know that there are tons of other different mm-hmm. scholarship opportunities and whatnot out there, but what's the first step in looking for those and finding them? I mean, yeah. they even have scholarships, I'm pretty sure, for like, even if you're Jewish or anything like that.
Yeah. So I would say like, you got to tap like every network, every connection and every sort of like skill and interest that you have really hard. I think that it's best, you know, always to start with your high school, because every high school has like high school specific scholarships that are usually left by like alumni or people within the community. And those are the ones where, right, you kind of joke, like they're like, can be very specific, like, oh, this is for, you know, somebody who ran track and is going to Boston University, or this is for a Girl Scout, or this is for somebody who did debate club, you know. So definitely, I remember like sorting through file cabinet like scholarship drawers when I was in high school, like looking for what is every single like local, you know, my high school specific scholarship that I could, that I was eligible for. And I applied for all of those, and I did get some high school scholarships. Like I got, I'm a proud Girl Scout, as mentioned, all the way up to my Gold Award. So I did get some scholarships for being a Girl Scout, and a few other miscellaneous scholarships. I feel like I got like a female specific one for community service. So I think starting there is best, because that's where there's like the lowest competition is, you know, at your own high school. And then of course, from there, like you can go outside of just your school, and there's plenty of like state and regional and national scholarships for different things. I think some of the best things you can talk to are teachers who know you and know what your strengths are and know what you've been involved in. So, you know, if you're really involved in science and math, you know, talk to those teachers, what scholarships are available, you know, theater, drama, music, because yeah, there's a lot of great scholarship opportunities out there that are specific to, you know, either what you did in high school or what you're going to pursue in college. So I spent a lot of time researching and digging into that stuff. And I'm sure that now, I mean, this is a long time ago that I was in high school, I'm sure that now there's even more easier, like digital resources for sorting through scholarships and that sort of thing. I feel like I even saw a company on Shark Tank once that was
probably
helping kids find scholarships more easily.
Yeah, probably. Well, that brings up a good point, because I'm also interested by how you interacted with people and colleagues and kind of, you know, created this community for yourself in college, because that's mm-hmm. also something that a lot of young people struggle with, is first yeah. leaving home and then being expected to go to college and know what you're doing. And I think that there's this assumption that you leave college and you're supposed to know even more about what you're doing. And it's not really like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I went into, it's funny, I actually just found my high school resume the other day. I was doing some Marie Kondoing into that whole new trend. And it says that I wanted to be a marketing, double major in marketing and political science, and a entrepreneurship jewelry arts minor. So it's not what I ended up doing. But of course, I think it's great if you know, or you think you know, what you want to do when you go to college. And, you know, that's probably what you'll base your school on, and, you know, what department you end up to start in. But one of my biggest tips I would say is to be open and really listen to yourself and how you're feeling about the learning experience and the people involved in those departments, in those areas, to see, like, does this feel right? Does this feel like something I would will be good at, that I will like in the long run? So for me, I thought, you know, I'm going to do marketing, I'm going to do business, because that's how you make money. And so I joined the marketing club. That was one of the first clubs I joined as a freshman. And, you know, started going to the meetings and getting involved, and, you know, lovely people in general. But I was just like, I don't like any of these people. Like, none of these, like, I didn't feel like I wanted to be friends with any of those people. And I just wasn't jiving. And I, you know, had started to take some business courses, but I started to just feel like really unsure of myself at that point, because, you know, that's what I had gone for. But I had this one course that I actually got placed into, like, really randomly. It was a freshman seminar about art history, or just related to art. And the professor for that class was so amazing, so interesting, so smart. I love that class so much. And, you know, I started thinking, like, maybe I could do something in fine arts, because that's the department that class was in. And even starting freshman year, I was going to the Career Center, which most people don't do. And I would say another big tip would be go to the Career Center early, because they do know what they're talking about and they can be very helpful. And so it was through going to the Career Center and being connected with this one career coach for most of my, or career counselor for most of my freshman and sophomore year, who gave me the courage and the confidence to switch my major into graphic design and fine arts. And if I hadn't have had those conversations and someone to reassure me that, you know, not all artists are starving, like, you can be a creative person and make a living, I probably wouldn't have switched and would have stayed a business major, and, you know, might not had the same experience that, you know, helped me launch my company.
So, Emily, when you were in college, at what point did you realize that there was kind of this missing need? I mean, this missing gap where young people weren't getting the tools that they needed to figure out what career they wanted to follow?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I would say probably around my junior year, when I had switched over to being a fine arts and design major, and a lot of my friends were in more creative industries like film and television, or they wanted to be writers, or, you know, magazines, that sort of thing, in media. And, you know, that's when I realized that there was definitely more of a struggle with folks that wanted to do more of those creative careers, where it wasn't such a straight path to landing a job or moving up. Versus, say, if you were going to be an accountant, where, you know, those kids were getting recruited, like, way before they graduated, and it was this very structured career ladder, and very simple. And so that's when I realized there was a gap of career resources for those folks. And then also just seeing my peers at the time struggle with finding internships, doing their resume, and especially with networking. I pushed myself a lot to network and go to events and get out of my comfort zone and connecting with people. And just at the same time was just seeing, again, peers, like, really struggle with it. Or they just didn't realize, and, you know, many don't realize how important it is, and they don't start networking and connecting with people early enough.
Was that something that you were automatically good at? Like, were you just off the bat a good networker? Is that something you have to train yourself?
So I've definitely always been a people person. So I've never, you know, had trouble being, you know, like speaking in front of groups. And, you know, I did debate club, I did theater. I often was, you know, starting clubs or in leadership positions. So I would say, I'm more of an extrovert and a leader in general throughout my life. So, you know, that side of things, yes, did come more naturally. But even with all of that, again, I would still get nervous and uncomfortable in professional networking situations, which, you know, made me think, like, if I'm nervous about it and I don't know exactly how to go about it, then, you know, other people who are introverts or they don't have the leadership experience that I've had must be really struggling. But I would say I also had some key professors in college that pushed me and helped me to understand the importance of networking. You know, one professor in particular, who's still an advisor actually now for my company, you know, when you're talking about benefits of college, I would say one of the very biggest ones that is also one of the most underutilized are the professors themselves. You know, I think a lot of people, they take the classes and, you know, do the homework and what they need to get the grade. And they're really missing out on opportunities to form relationships that can help them outside of the classroom, you know, within their job and their career and long after, you know, they leave college. And especially now as a professor myself for over 5 years now, I've had over 300 students at this point, and I see it all the time. It's kind of the same typical ratio of students who actually will take advantage of building a relationship with me. And that's not to say you have to build a relationship with every professor, like you won't love all of them or even get along with all of them, but they're just such a great resource. And people who teach, you know, they're not doing it for the money for the most part. You know, it's not like a very well-paying job in general, and more professors are adjuncts. So they're there because they're really passionate about what they are teaching and helping students. So I would say taking advantage of those professors by, you know, doing well in the class and connecting with them is huge. And that's one of the big ways that I learned the importance of networking.
So for those who are not as extroverted as yourself, I was always very extroverted too. So networking for me was never really an issue, but it really is so crucial, but it can be so intimidating. Do you have one first tip off the bat? Say you get invited to a work party or a party with all of your interns, and you know that there's going to be people there that you want to introduce yourself to, but you're so scared and so nervous. What's the first step?
I would say realizing that it's awkward. It's a little awkward and a little uncomfortable for everyone when it comes to meeting new people. So I think, you know, getting out of the mindset of like, it's only you, like you're the weirdo. Nobody else feels this way. You know, it's tough meeting new people. And I think everyone feels like that to a certain extent. And I also think one of the biggest just logistical things is that people have a tough time starting a conversation with a stranger. Like opening the conversation can be difficult. So I would say having some openers, like ideas of like, what can you say to open a conversation with people before you're going to the event, based on what the event is. So like you mentioned a work party, right? So if you're going to a work party, maybe say as like an intern, a lowly intern, where maybe you don't know a lot of people, but you know some people, I would say start by talking to people who you do already have some sort of connection with. And oftentimes if you do that, you can be sort of brought in to other conversations with other people and then sort of, what's a good word? Like kind of, chip off and then have your own conversations with those other people who you get brought into like the circle with. So starting with folks, you know, who you, you know, have that relationship with already. And if you're going to an event where you don't know anyone, which is extremely nerve-wracking, you know, very simple conversation openers like, oh, like, hey, my name's Emily. So what brought you to the event? what brought you here? Or, you know, how did you find out about the event? Or, you know, do you know the speakers or who do you know here? You know, that first kind of simple opener is usually a good way to get the conversation started.
That's good advice. And when it comes to business cards, are those crucial nowadays too? I always hand out a business card, but everyone just takes a picture of it.
I love business cards. I actually, of course, listened to some of your episodes beforehand and I was like, yes, a business card advocate. I think they're great. And I actually also had business cards in college. I actually have a business card holder filled with my old business cards because, you know, I would change them based on, you know, whatever my new direction was. I think they're great. And they can be very, very inexpensive, and agree with your advice to, you know, you don't need to put your title on them. And, you know, when you have a job, you'll probably get cards with your title. But it's always great to have a card that just has your name and your contact information. And hopefully that includes a personal website and a LinkedIn, which I'm a big believer in as well.
I agree. LinkedIn is so important. And even if you don't have anything to put on your resume, I know beforehand when we were talking before we started the episode, that's something that you said that you've talked a lot about too, is how to deal if you don't have any substantial stuff to put on your resume. Because if you're in high school and you're trying, you know, you're applying to colleges, or even if you're just simply in college and you leave college and you haven't taken any big job yet. So what do you fill that resume with?
Yeah, well, so hopefully, even if you haven't had a quote unquote real job, like a corporate job, you have things like leadership experience. So any sort of club positions, either in high school or college, are very impressive. And, you know, after that, there's also involvement in clubs. So were you a member of certain clubs? That says a lot about you and, you know, what you care about. And also, you know, starting off, yes, if you have a food service job or a babysitting job or a retail job, you know, those are really great experiences. And also, most people have had some sort of job like that, so they can relate to it. And they know, you know, if you've worked in food service, you have that specific type of experience under your belt of dealing with people, and that sort of thing. So I would say don't be shy about putting that on your LinkedIn and your resume when you're just starting out, because those do give you very, very important skills that you'll use with any job. And then also things like volunteering. So, you know, any sort of volunteer activities, whether it's consistent or if it's something like, you know, you volunteered at New York Fashion Week or something like that, that's really great. And then, you know, I'm a big believer in the side hustle, as I know you are as well. And so, you know, any sort of business that you have, whether or not you're getting paid for it right now, or you're making a lot of money from it, you know, if you're selling things on Etsy, if you have a website where maybe you do copy editing for something, or you have a blog, or you have a Instagram that you run about food in your neighborhood, like those sort of things that you do independently say a lot about you and your character, because it means that you're proactive and you're pursuing your interests and you're not just waiting to be told, like, you know, do these things at this job. Like, you're taking it upon yourself to get experience. So that's a big misnomer. I think people think, oh, if it's not, again, quote unquote, real, like on the books, if I'm not getting paid for it, I can't give it space on a resume or LinkedIn, but you certainly should.
This might sound a little ridiculous, but, you know, if you're one of those people who doesn't have a lot to put on that resume, can you in any capacity maybe make the resume sound a little bit better? Like, say you did like a 1-day internship. Can you say it's a 5-day internship? I mean, how important is it to be completely transparent on that resume, or does it help in any way to fake it till you make it, in a sense?
So, you know, I think there's a fine line, right? I don't think it's never good to put things that are not true on your resume. So whether, for instance, that's like a period of time or something like that, if you don't want to get into the nitty gritty or specifics about something, you know, leave it vague, you know, right? So, you know, you can put, if you did something for just say like a few days or just a few weeks of like the summer, you know, like an internship type role, you could say, you know, summer 2008. And if they want to get into the nitty gritty of how much, you know, how long you were there or that sort of thing, you can get into it. But you certainly don't want to say like July to August if you're only there for July or something like that. And also, you know, something, for instance, that I work with a lot of creatives, specifically, for instance, at School of Visual Arts, it's a lot of, animators. It's all computer animation folks. And so they're using lots of programs, like different software skills, software programs. And, in the creative world, people who use software programs and things, you'll see those resumes that have like kind of the sliding scale of how good they are at certain programs versus others. So like, I'm a 2 out of 3 in this and a 1 out of 3 in this and a 3 out of 3 in this. And I always say, those are such a waste of space because they're totally subjective. Like, I don't know what your 1 out of 3 is versus a 2 out of 3. So I recommend that if you know something to an extent, like some sort of software or computer program or social media platform, put it in your skills section. And once you get into the interview, you can talk more about how much you know of each platform. You know, so for instance, most young people have some knowledge of most social media platforms, or at least the big ones, right? So they should be putting Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, LinkedIn, maybe Tumblr, or, you know, some other Reddit, some other sites, like any social media platform you know how to use, is actually a career skill. And so even if you, you know, you're all into Instagram and you know everything about it and you know, maybe you only have a Reddit account, but you don't really use it often, but you know how it works, put them both in your skills section in your resume. And then again, wait until it gets to that conversation to go more in detail about, you know, how much you know each platform. But that's something to think about.
So what's the key for that resume portion with that skill section? Because say I wanted to go and work in marketing, I would think I would write, okay, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, but do those all go under one heading? Like how do you organize that section? Because so many of these industries too, there's so much overlap. Like if you're in the business industry, you're probably still good at some capacity in social media.
Yeah, well, so usually on resumes, the skills section is basically a list of skills. So it's just kind of like all the skills within that section separated. And so what you always want to do when you're applying for jobs is think about what does that particular job require and emphasizing and prioritizing the things that they want to see and know about you. So for instance, if you're applying for a marketing internship where they ask for social media skills, and that's like a big part of the role, instead of just lumping all of your skills together, like your Microsoft Office and your Photoshop and your social media tools into one section, you could actually separate those out and you could have an entire section that's just called social media skills. And you can put all the social media platforms you know under that. And then you can have a separate section that says, you know, computer and software skills. And that's where you put Google Docs and Microsoft Office and those sort of things. And that's really beneficial because when the recruiter is scanning that resume so quickly, they'll see, oh, wow, this person has a social media skills section. Like that's going to stand out more than hiding. Or even worse, like some people might put a skills section and only write the word social media as a skill. And they like don't flesh out, well, like social media is a very broad category, right? So it's really good to get specific and to highlight things that are important for each job and to even reorder your skills based on what the job descriptions are looking for, which basically boils down to customize every resume and cover letter that you send out for any job.
Oh, so you really are supposed to customize every cover letter.
Yeah. Yeah. And cover letters and resumes. And of course, that doesn't mean writing it from scratch each time. But what I recommend is starting with a template where you have every single thing ever that you've ever done and, you know, make a copy of that and then start paring things down and reordering based on the job. And yes, it will take longer if you do it that way, if you take the time to customize, but I 100% guarantee if you spend more time on less applications, you will get farther in the application process because recruiters really notice when you've taken that extra time to customize your materials.
I didn't realize that because I feel like a lot of people go and kind of copy and paste that mm-hmm. cover letter. But I guess even if you're kind of cold pitching somebody or looking mm-hmm. for an internship online, then perhaps it is most important to customize that cover letter.
Yeah, because basically what that means is you're making it easier for the recruiter to see that you will be good for this specific job and you're reaching out to this specific job, right? And the opposite is, you know, and I work with so many recruiters and, you know, hear about recruiters all the time will get cover letters addressed to the wrong company, you know, or the cover letter will talk about skills that have nothing to do with the job opening because most people do just copy and paste things or, you know, in the worst case, they, you know, accidentally send the wrong materials. And so you really get lost in the shuffle if you do that. The way to stand out, which is, you know, the question we get all the time, how do I stand out, is to take that extra time to really customize your materials. And then also after you submit your regular application, you take time to try to find an actual human at that company who you can connect with either digitally or in person to introduce yourself as well and let them know that you applied.
Is it okay to just, when writing a resume, find a template online, or is there one specific place you're supposed to copy that resume after?
In terms of the format, I would say that that's not as important. Like, find a format that you like. There's a lot of different resources out there for resume formats. You know, number one priority is just make sure that it's consistent and that it's easy to read. So, you know, don't be overwhelmed about making it like super creative or funky or crazy colors or anything like that, because, you know, recruiter just needs to be able to read it, and you want to have a nice, consistently formatted resume. One tip I would say that is very practical, and the design major in me knows the terms for this, because most resumes are read online now, so, you know, recruiters are looking at them on their screen, it's easier to read sans serif fonts than it is to read serif fonts, which serif fonts are the ones that are like Times New Roman, where they have little like kind of accents on each letter. Sans serif fonts are like Arial and Helvetica that are easier to read. So I always recommend using a sans serif font on your resume.
Wow, I'm literally learning so much here. This is amazing. So at what point when you're in college did FindSpark become an idea that you really thought you could monetize? How long between leaving college and starting the company did it begin to become successful?
Well, two different questions there. I would say, you know, really still while I was in college is when I started to think like, this is something that I want to do. I wasn't necessarily thinking this is something I want to be my full-time job or that could be a business, but I knew I wanted to do it. And I wasn't necessarily, yeah, thinking about the money side, but I did think right from the start, well, like people pay to go to events, and I know that I will make events a big part of this company. And so, you know, I'll be able to monetize it to an extent in that way. And so I actually hosted my first FindSpark event the December after I graduated. So it was pretty quickly that I got this off the ground. Part of the reason that it happened so quickly is because I just was talking to everybody about the idea. Like anyone who would listen, and I would say, yeah, you know, I have this idea. This is what I want to do with it. This is the goal. And through actually a professor, I got connected to this woman who worked at a space at the time that was called the Wix Lounge. And it was run by the company Wix.com, which is a platform for building websites. And I told her this idea that I wanted to do events that were very fun and welcoming to connect employers and students and recent grads. And she said, oh, well, you could have an event here. And I thought, oh, a free event space in New York. I better get on this because who knows how long this place will be open. So, you know, I took her up on that offer, and that was December 2010 that we had that first event.
And then how quickly did your team grow? Because alongside with the company, you obviously do so many different college talks and are a professor at a few different colleges as well.
Yeah, well, so I did FindSpark as a side hustle for about 3 years before I took it full time. So I was not the very, risk-taking entrepreneur that just like quit my job all of a sudden and did it full time. So I had two normal 9-to-5 jobs, one at a corporate publishing company first out of school, which I landed through my college career center through a career fair. And then the second job through networking, I worked at a startup for about a year and a half. And so during those times, I was working really, really hard. I was doing a lot. So I had my 9-to-5. And then every 6 to 11 and weekend, I was building FindSpark. I had people helping me. So I did find two co-founders who are now advisors. And they helped pretty much from the beginning as well. So it was about 2013 when I took it full time. And, you know, to get to that point, I was charging for things. So we were charging the employers for the job board. We were charging ticket prices for the events. And so I had the confidence of like, okay, well, I'm making some money, from this. There's a need for it. And I wanted to give, that's really where my passion wasn't as passionate about the current, full-time job. And then I also knew, so I had a safety net financially, that I had saved up. I was able to pay off, all of my student debt, by that point. And I also knew that, I could consult as well. So, I was doing a ton of networking. So I figured, I can do FindSpark and also do social media consulting and events consulting, which is, which is my professional background, all the while I build FindSpark as well. So, I definitely was thinking about all of those kind of financial things, before I took the leap.
So you were just doing so many things and still continue to do so many things, but it seems a little more refined now than when you first initially started. But you said that you walked away with college owing you money. Can you talk about that a little more?
Yeah. Well, because, So as mentioned, so I came into school like freshman year with scholarship money. So I had like gotten an initial offer, and then I went to them and I said, I need more to come here. And they gave me more. And then I was always doing work study, which is basically you make money that goes like directly to your tuition. So I was doing work study. I had earned some other scholarships, worked as an orientation leader. So lots of jobs and things. And so when it got to like the end of, and then I also was paying like my own money from that I had made, and my parents were contributing as well. And so basically, because of the extra scholarship money that I had gotten from the fine arts department my senior year, it was like something like some sort of like auto payment went through from my family. But then they realized that like, because of the scholarship money that I had gotten on top of that, that they actually had to pay, like I had overpaid the tuition.
So wow,
like
my that's last, rare.
Yeah. So it was pretty awesome. I was like, oh, you guys actually owe me money. So that was a fun like kind of way to leave, to be like, oh, hey, you owe me now. But I did, I did leave a student debt as well, but it was just like a weird payment thing that, but again, my huge tip there is like, ask for scholarships, ask where, ask for pockets of money, and of course do it when you are do it with the departments and the people who you've built relationships. Because the thing is, like, schools want to keep awesome students. Like they want you to be able to go and to stay there. Like I thought I was going to have to leave Hofstra. Like I didn't think I was going to be able to continue to afford it. And that was super scary for me. But I was so involved from such an early, like really right off the bat. Like I think I was an orientation leader, maybe even my end of my first semester, definitely, first year. Or sorry, not orientation leader, tour guide. So, you know, everybody knew how passionate I was about Hofstra and how much I loved it there. And I was already contributing so much, early on that, you know, they wanted to help me. They wanted to see me succeed and for me to be able to stay there. So it was really, it was very, crucial that I vocalized that I had a need, because if I hadn't said anything, then I might not have ever graduated from there.
So when it comes to FindSpark, how do you not compare yourself to like a LinkedIn or an Indeed when looking for jobs?
Yeah, well, you know, for us, we're always very focused on the community side of things and having an offline component because, you know, as you've heard, one of our big motivations for starting was trying to help people understand the importance of networking and really the face-to-face building relationships. That's what it comes down to. Like if you think the word networking is like icky and shallow, you know, call it building relationships because that's what it is. And so because we had that offline component, that's always been a big separator, differentiator and why people like us. And even we do also have, virtual events as well. And even our virtual events, although they are virtual, so, you know, they're webinars, there's a live chat component so people can connect with each other in the chat. And so that I think is a big reason why people like us and a big way that the word has spread about FindSpark is through word of mouth from people who have attended an event in person. We always really prioritize those experiences and making everyone feel very welcome and making them inclusive and productive and connecting really great people. So that's been a big differentiator. And, you know, maybe LinkedIn or Indeed has, they don't have very many offline events, if any. LinkedIn probably does more than Indeed. But it's just different. It's a different type of tool. You know, we've always also been very curated about the jobs and the employers that we work with. And so companies or our members have gotten to know the types of roles and companies that they'll find through FindSpark, which is much less than, you find everything on Indeed and you find everything on LinkedIn. But a lot of times, like, you don't want to find everything. Like, you want to find just the things that you want, which if you want a creative or business or tech role in a major city, then, you know, you can find that with FindSpark. So a big part of our differentiation has also been that curated side of things and that you don't have to sort through a bunch of sketchy jobs that you're not even sure are real on our platform.
So first, leaving college, for those who may be a little bit clueless or confused, where do you first look for that job opportunity? Or maybe you haven't even gone to college, and like a real traditional college, and you did online college or community college. I'm not super sure, but I doubt that right when you're leaving college, they give you like 15 places to look for jobs at.
Yeah. Well, you know, using your online tools, you know, is definitely great, right? So there's a lot of ways you can search for jobs, you know, on different job boards and things like that. So, you know, there's some value to that. But one of the best things that you can do is before you graduate is to start having informational interviews, both digitally and in person, with people who have careers that you are interested in. So for those of folks in your audience who might not know, an informational interview is what it sounds like. So it's an interview, a meeting. It's when you connect with somebody to gather information about their career, about their industry, their role, how they got there. And it's not a job interview. So it's not for a specific role. And so, you know, why does somebody do an informational interview in terms of, you know, the person helping? Well, it's because, you know, everybody was at the point in their career at some point where they didn't know what the hell they were doing and they needed help. And so people who have gained experience want to give back. And so especially as a college student and then also as a recent grad, you want to play up or not play up, but you want to, you know, take advantage of your newness and your greenness and know that like more experienced professionals are more willing to help people who are younger, and use that time to form these connections, to have these informational interviews, to get a better sense of what opportunities are out there and what you might like and might not like. And then those people and those relationships are a huge way that you can find jobs. And that's a huge way that you find jobs that maybe aren't even listed on the Indeeds or the LinkedIns yet. But you learn about it first because you have a relationship with somebody and they're willing to stick their neck out for you and make a recommendation.
Well, Emily, you are quite educated in this field, and talking with you has been really interesting. I've learned a lot, especially when it comes to what script to write a resume in, because I would have had no clue. I feel like I could talk with you for hours, but I want everyone to kind of soak all this information in. So I'd love to get you back on the podcast on another note, on a different time, to talk more about this before I overwhelm people with too much information. But where can everyone find out more information about you and the company and maybe even come to one of your events?
Yeah, well, so you can sign up to get all the updates about FindSpark at findspark.com/newsletter. So it's our free newsletter, and it's FindSpark, so one word, but with a D. And then I am Emily Mithner on all platforms, so Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter. I encourage people to connect with me. It's not easy to spell, so they should copy and paste it from your show description. But if you can find FindSpark, you can find me, and I'm very easy to get in touch with and connect with online. So I look forward to staying connected with you. And thank you so much for having me and connecting with some of your listeners.
Yes. Thank you so much for taking the time to share your insight about college with everyone. I'm so interested in now. I have even more new research I want to conduct. But thank you again. You guys, make sure to follow her on social media, as well as check out the company that I'll put in the description for the podcast, because I think that there is some great advice that Emily had throughout this episode. And probably if you reach out to her on your own, for those of you who are nervous or not able to find your dream job, she can help. Make sure to follow This Is Life Unfiltered on social media at This Is Life Podcast, and also write us a review on the App Store, on the podcast app, so I know who you want to hear on the podcast next. And we will see you next week for our new episode. Talk to you guys soon. Bye.